world of smelly information to which we humans, with perhaps the least sensitive noses of any mammal, are oblivious. I soon became fascinated by the behaviour of both cat and dog, and not just the part governed by scent. I came to recognise in it an enthralling compromise between their wild origins as canid and felid, and the requirements of their modern domestic lifestyles. And I became increasingly aware that their behaviour could not be divorced from how their owners behaved and thought about them. It soon dawned on me that, although I might think about cats and dogs as mammals while at work, at home, neither I nor anyone else viewed our pets in this way. Most owners treat these animals as little people, talking to them as if they understand what is being said. I seemed to do this as much as anyone else, despite being well aware that such comprehension was almost certainly impossible. Once I began to think about pets in their domestic context, it followed that more than just their physical surroundings and the various purposes we have put them to down the ages have shaped the dogs and cats of today. The workings of our own brains have indirectly moulded them, and now that we have largely liberated them from their former utilitarian roles, these influences are becoming ever more paramount. Their cuteness attracts us, well, most of us, instinctively. The features that kittens and puppies, and to a lesser extent adult cats and some dogs, share with human babies seem to trigger our protective and caring side. Our brains also perceive intention in almost anything that moves, and thus, without a moment's reflection, we automatically ascribe all kinds of human-like emotions and intentions to our animals. Some of these are probably reasonably accurate. Others are wildly imaginative. Generally, the errors don't matter, but sometimes they do, as when our pets fall short of the often unrealistic expectations we have of them. I eventually concluded that we simply can never understand the behavior of pet animals without factoring in the workings of the human mind. This realization kindled my interest in what the few academics with any interest in the subject back in the 1980s referred to as the human-animal bond. I began to attend conferences that included the topic of pet ownership. At a workshop on the day after one such conference, as it happened also my 40th birthday, I and six other academics present coined the term anthrozoology to sum up what we all did and to give a distinctive title to the society we founded a year later, the International Society for Anthrozoology. Not that we could take credit for creating this word from scratch, we had adapted it from the title of an academic journal, Anthrozoos, which had published its first issue 3 years previously. The word stuck, and now, a quarter century on, students can earn a qualification in anthrozoology from universities all around the world. The field mainly brings together various types of scientists, biologists, veterinarians, medical researchers, psychologists, social scientists, and anthropologists to study the personal relationships that people have with animals, and to a lesser extent, that animals have with people. Thus, anthrozoology has focused most on those types of animals that serve widely as companions: dogs, cats, horses, aquarium fish, leisure horses, and so on. A parallel movement, sometimes referred to as human-animal studies, has grown up among those interested in more philosophical approaches, such as ethics, political science, history, geography, and literature. There is unfortunately not much dialogue between the two camps. In some senses, I've been writing this book for more than 20 years. The more I studied pets and their owners, the more intrigued I became. Despite sometimes suffering due to our misunderstanding of their requirements, cats and dogs were obviously benefiting from their relationships with people. There are far more of them in the world today than there are of the wild ancestors from which they emerged thousands of years ago. Yet, somewhat paradoxically, their numbers actually grew just as their usefulness to us disappeared. Only a few dogs still herd sheep or help with hunting. Most owners find their cats' once valued hunting prowess appalling. Pets' hold on their owners seems to run deeper than mere fashion. So, using as wide a range of sources as I could find, in addition to as much original research as I could fit in around my studies of cats,